I was asked to give in advance a title for this talk, so I gave the title. It could have been any one of thousands of titles, but I gave the title as Coping with Fear and Insecurity. I especially thought of speaking on this topic due to one prominent item in the news. Now, the news of this world is that there's suffering always, and that we can take shelter of Krishna and come out of this suffering. But specific item of news at the present time is the threat of terrorism from some people over in Iraq, who are threatening to strike at the heart of Britain and USA with their terror activities, which might not make you have sleepless nights, but you never know. The very nature of terrorism is that they strike unexpectedly in the most horrible ways they can. So that is an extra fear to add to all the other fears we have. We live in a world of fear. We live in a society which, apart from the threat of terrorism, can strike any place, any time. We have various fears. Living in urban Britain, you can just be attacked any time. Happened to me, actually, when I was 14 years old. I was just minding my own business, walking along the side of the canal when a couple of people hit me on the head with a steel bar or something like this. As it was a canal, I swam to the other side and would have probably passed out if the water hadn't been freezing cold. And that's the kind of thing that happens. It's actually very good for me because it led me to, got rid of all my long hair because it's all full of blood, and helped me to think a bit about what I was doing with my life. And, well, my life did go on a somewhat different course to normal, what would be considered normal in Britain, if anything's normal. So, yeah, this kind of thing can happen, and it's a violent society. We don't see it on us around us all the time, but actually it is a very violent society. Even if we manage to get through our whole life without being a victim of such violence, violence is going on all around us. We often hear about this. There was another talking about the news. Some time ago it came in the news that a prominent figure in the Indian embassy in London had to be repatriated to India because there was a complaint about him beating his wife, and there were lots of screams and this and that, and he tried to get diplomatic immunity. And there was a statement from Scotland Yard or whatever that we already have enough violent crime in this country, we don't need any more, something to that effect. So apart from the violence to humans, which is unpleasant and should be a cause of anxiety, we have to be careful when we're going out at night. There's a lot of violence going on all the time, which not too many people seem to care very much about. Violence to animals. I'm not talking about dogs and cats. I'm talking about the cows and pigs and chickens and fish who are slaughtered every day. They're either slaughtered in this country or slaughtered elsewhere, and their flesh is imported to this country. So there is a lot of violence, and we can be victims of it any time. Fear and insecurity. Insecurity is another aspect of fear. But apart from the fear of bombs going off, being attacked by some madman with a machete, which could happen, there's also the insecurity of if we have a job, we don't know if it's going to last. If we have a spouse, we don't know if it's going to last. And so on and so on. We live in a very insecure world. Marriage used to mean that, well, you get married and that's it. For better or worse, in sickness or health, in poverty or wealth, and all this kind of thing. Nowadays, it seems to mean, well, hope it lasts a few years. We'll see how it goes, if we can make it through the first few months or the first few years. So we live in an era of fear and insecurity, of heightened fear and insecurity, but actually this whole world is one of fear. That is the very condition of material existence. Bhayam, that word is the Sanskrit word which regularly appears in the Vedic literature. Bhayam dvitiya bhinivesheta syat ishada petyasya viparyaya smritihi. The reason for fear. What are the reasons for our fear? Well, we fear being attacked, we fear death, we fear being insulted or humiliated, various kinds of fear. But the very nature of this world is that we live in an atmosphere of fear. And the root cause of that is that we are not in our actual constitutional position. What does that mean? Constitutional position. Our constitutional position, what we're meant to be. We're meant to be happy. Yes, we're meant to be happy. We're actually meant to be happy. We're meant to be eternal. We're meant to know what's going on. It's called Satchidananda, technical terms. We're meant to be eternal, cognizant of who we are, what we are, why everything is, and blissful. But in this material world, we're in a condition where we're not in eternal position. We all have to die and get reborn and die and get reborn. We don't know why we're here, or where we're going, or where we're coming from. And we all desire to be happy, but it's a hopeless cause, trying to be happy in this material world, when anyway we all have to die again and again. We don't want to die, but we're forced to die. We don't want to get sick, we're forced to get sick. So what is the root cause of this? The root cause of this is forgetfulness of Krishna, who is the source of all eternity, cognizance, and bliss. Separated from Krishna, we must suffer. Attached to Krishna, that's called yoga. Yoga means joining. By joining with Krishna, then automatically we stop getting born again and dying again, which means there's no more fear of death. We don't remain in this world, which is full of birth and death, and therefore fear and violence and everything else, either in an enhanced form, as we see in the modern urban culture, or in the more moderate form, we may live in a very peaceful society, but still we have to die and be born again. So in the spiritual world where we are meant to live, then there's all happiness, all bliss, all peacefulness. Everything nice, everything good. This might sound like some kind of utopian desire, but actually it's natural for us to desire. Why do we desire to be happy? Because that is our nature, to be happy. Why do we desire water? Because water exists and we need it, at least for our body. So the desire to be happy is natural. But trying to find happiness in this world is a useless endeavor, because this world is full of birth and death and fear and suffering. So we can overcome all fear, all anxiety, all insecurities. In fact, all the problems that we have individually and collectively simply by understanding this simple point, that there is God, He is all blissful, and by connecting with Him, by yoga, usually this word is understood to mean some exercises, but the actual meaning of the word is yoga. Yoga means yoking, which means linking. So by linking up with Krishna, which is possible by the process of bhakti, pure devotion, love, then we become free from fear, anxiety, insecurity, and every other problem that there is. So what is the solution to fear? Love. Well, we may say, well, that doesn't work. If some madman attacks you with a machete and you just love him, that won't help. It may not help the individual circumstance, but the whole point is to get free from this material existence. And actually a self-realized person, a person situated in yoga, they don't experience fear. There may be some... Ah, yeah, that's stated in Bhagavad Gita. The first quality of a person in the divine conscious, abhayam, means free from fear. Now, if someone walks up to someone who's self-realized and swings a fist at them, they may instinctively move their head away if their fist is aimed at the head. But their inner consciousness is one of no anxiety. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he's not concerned about living or dying, because they know anyway you have to die sometime. Srila Prabhupada often cited the example of Socrates, who, when he was given poison to drink, he just drank it and said, well, anyway, they want me to die, so I'll die. But only the body will die. He was aware that he is not the body, that the body can be killed, but the soul cannot be killed. So if we understand, this is actually the first teaching of Bhagavad Gita, that we are the soul and not the body, and the soul never dies, and the body must die, however much we try to keep it alive, then we have no cause for fear. It's a simple formula. Of course, to internalize it, to actually achieve self-realization, that is something else. It's easier to say it than to actually feel it and internalize it. But even knowing this, even if we just know that anyway we have to die, anyway we have to suffer in this world in various ways, if we accept that, even just by knowing it, then we make a big step toward fearlessness. If we know that we are not in control of our situation, sometimes we hear the saying, take control of your life, which is a good idea, but we should know also that we cannot fully take control of our life. Certainly we should make, taking stock of the situation, we should make intelligent decisions to live our life in the best possible way. Of course, we can't control it. Like I said, we could decide, all right, from now on I'm going to stop smoking, drinking, wenching, or whatever, and just chant Hare Krishna. But then we may die within the next few minutes after that. But still, we can... taking as a fairly good possibility that I will live for some time and I should intelligently decide if I'm going to be alive in this body for some more time, how to utilize that opportunity, how to live in the best possible way so that I may have the best possible benefit for myself and for others. That is a good decision to make, isn't it? We all... considering that we are alive in this particular body right now, And that this human body is a very great opportunity, because in human life we have intelligence on a level that is not found in birds and insects and fish and animals and plants, which are also conscious living beings, but they don't have the level of intelligence that humans have to think, well, what are we doing here? What's the purpose of life? So seeing as we have that intelligence and we can take information from the Vedic knowledge, Veda means knowledge, of how to best live our life. So considering that now we have the human body, we won't have it very long, but whatever time we have, we can utilize that for self-realization. By taking this intelligent decision, we can make the best use of a bad bargain. A bad bargain is that we're in this material world anyway, where there is, suffering is guaranteed. We can become less fearful if we understand that suffering is guaranteed. Anyway, it's going to be there. It's, however much we may dream of a happy life, there will be so many, there may be some things that make us happy, that it's not as cold as we might have expected it at this time of year. Is that right? We expect it to be colder at this time of year? Okay, so that gives us a little extra happiness. I mean, it doesn't make us jump up and down in the streets with ecstasy, but okay, it's better than being cold. So there may be some causes of happiness. What other cause of happiness there in Sheffield in Yorkshire? What's it, West Yorkshire now? South Yorkshire, okay. Anything else you can think of that might make you happy? Yeah. Sheffield United win. What about Sheffield Wednesday? You don't like them? You see, well, it depends. This area is near Hillsborough, isn't that the place? See, I know from back 40 years ago. I visited Hillsborough once. You don't like Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield United might win. What are the chances of that? Not much. You see, all these sports, they're actually a cause of more suffering. You know why? Because there are like 20 teams, 20 football teams in the league, right? Or in the division or whatever. And only one of them is the champion. And all the rest, all 19 others or whatever, are lamenting. And then the next year, whoever's the champion, they're not the champion. And so most of the time, the sport is, it actually causes us more suffering. So, okay, there might be a cause for happiness if Sheffield United win, but then if Sheffield United win, then Sheffield Wednesday fans won't be very happy. So someone will be happy and someone will be unhappy. So, any other causes of happiness? When you get your science degree, you'll be happy. It looks like you've been trying for it for a long time. You don't. Usually young men or young people go for degrees. IT and science. Okay, you're doing it later in life. You'll be happy when you get your science degree. You'll have achieved something, a science degree, a degree of understanding science. You'll be a bachelor of science, and that will make you happy. All right, so these things can make us happy, but the struggle to get it isn't that much happy. It doesn't give you a lot of happiness, does it? Just general science, is it? What is it? IT? Computer science. I don't know about in England, but in India, whatever computer course you study is fairly useless because it's all out of date. By the time they get the course together and teach it to you, the computer science has gone on ahead. So, anyway, have fun with your science course. The softwares are always changing, the operating systems are always changing, the hardware is always changing. I guess the theory underlying it all stays pretty much the same. So, all right, there are causes of happiness in this world, but the causes of unhappiness are more striking. For instance, you may get your science degree. Hope you get it. But even if somehow or other you had a massive spurt of intelligence and you somehow had some amazing insights that makes you the most sought after figure in the whole computer world, which isn't very likely, I would think, still you have to die. Just like that fellow Steve Jobs, he was a great innovator, and now he's not because he's dead. So, yeah, which was undoubtedly a cause of... Bill Gates is still alive, but it won't be long before he's dead, and you're dead, and I'm dead, and everyone in this room will be dead, and we don't really want to be, but it will happen. So, what's the population of Sheffield? About, what, 700,000, something like that? No, not that much. Anyone I don't know? 300,000, 400,000, 500,000. It depends if you include all those other places like Rotherham and this and that in the urban mass. Okay, so there are 500,000 approximately people who all have to face something which they don't want at all, which is death. Well, that sounds pretty miserable, but it's a fact. So, bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita given by Krishna, they teach us how to get out of this major problem. Our major problem is not that Sheffield United are not winning all their games. That's not the real problem. The real problem is not that I still didn't get my BSc degree, even after trying so long. The real problem, much bigger, at least we can say a much, much bigger problem, is that we all have to die. That's a major problem, isn't it? What do you think? If it's a pretty bad problem. I mean, if we were called out, someone came in here with the, again, the theoretical machete appears in this talk, and says, okay, off with your head. Well, that would be considered something pretty problematic, more than not getting your science degree. But machete or no machete, we all have to die. People generally don't like to talk about these things. I don't know why we should talk about it, isn't it? I mean, if you have a really serious problem, we should think how to overcome it. That's a really serious problem. In the newspapers, there may be in the local Sheffield newspapers, there may be discussion of why Sheffield United aren't winning. What do we have to do? Change the manager, change the chairman, change this, change that, change something else, and still Sheffield United don't win anything. Or Sheffield Wednesday either, probably. I don't know. You'd be happy to see Sheffield Wednesday lose, maybe, is it? So, by the way, if you don't know, these are the names of the local football clubs. You know, you could work that out. But why don't they discuss that? Well, we all have to die. What are we going to do about that? Why? What is it? It's called mass stupidity. Notwithstanding all the many educational institutions, as we were driving out of Manchester, I saw every other building's a university. They used to call them colleges, now they're all called universities. Despite all the many educational institutions which are imparting knowledge about how to... Actually, it's all for getting jobs mostly, isn't it? Nowadays, university means to get some degree with the hope that you'll get a job. But the problem is that everyone else has a degree. So if you can end up being a bus driver after getting your degree, then you'll be happy, or you should be happy, because there aren't that many jobs. having a BSc doesn't help that much, I would think, nowadays, even to be a bus driver. So we're concerned with so many problems, but the real problem is that we all have to die. But it's such a big problem, and it seems we don't have any solution. We don't even want to talk about it. It's considered antisocial to talk about it. But it should be considered the best thing to talk about. if we actually have a solution. So what's the solution? Is there any solution? People just presume, well, there's no solution, but there is a solution. First of all, understand who we are, what's dying. What does it mean that we die? The body dies. Okay, but am I just the body? Is it just a bunch of chemicals? All the hopes, fears, aspirations, emotions, sensations, perceptions, is it just a bunch of chemicals? Well, if it is a bunch of chemicals, then why should we bother about dying anyway? I mean, why should, if someone dies or there's some murder, why is it a crime? If it's just a bunch of chemicals get reordered in a different way, then why is murder considered a crime? The very fact that we consider murder a crime, but we don't consider mixing together an acid and an alkali, and then the acid is finished. And the alkali is finished too. We don't consider that a crime because some chemicals changed their state. So why should we consider it a crime that a body that was formerly called living is now dead? Why is that? That means that we, although we may not want to admit it, but intrinsically we know that the bunch of chemicals which we call a body and it has life, that the life that is there is more than a bunch of chemicals. It's more important than simply a bunch of chemicals. If a car gets smashed up, that's pretty bad, but if a body is destroyed, then that's considered worse. If a person, so what does it mean to be a person? Is it just a bunch of chemicals? No. What gives life to the body is the soul. That's why when someone dies, we say they've gone away. Who, what went away? Where did they go? Why do we say they went away? In every language of the world, that's said. When someone dies, they say, oh, went away. That means that we understand that it's not just the body. There is a living being who left the body. But we don't think about these things. But we should think about these things. And if we do think about these things, then we can make a solution to the problem of death. That's a big problem. Fear is a big problem. Insecurity. All these problems can be solved simply by understanding who we are, that we're not the body. It's the first teaching of spiritual life, and all these eminent educational institutions in Britain, not one of them has a single clue about this. They don't even begin to think about it, which means that we have in this country a large population of highly educated fools. It's not only in this country, but we think that this civilization is very advanced. We have so many educated people. We have science, technology, so many things. But people are completely foolish because they do not even ask the right questions that they should be asking. Why is there suffering in this world? How can we overcome it? Why do we don't want to die, but we have to die. Why? What's underlying all of this? Well, people are more interested in cartoons and football games and actually, sorry to offend you, but stupid things like that. Trivial things, very trivial things. What does it matter actually? Whether I'm the next Einstein or just some humdrum person in the street. What does anything matter in this world? We come into this world, we're just here in a blip of time. If we think that this body is me, we don't know where we came from, where we're going, and we're just interested in petty things. But we are meant for eternal life, for happy life. And happiness, the happiness of, what is happiness in this world? Happiness of food, maybe happiness of being recognized, happiness of sex, happiness of having money. That's not real happiness. Real happiness is deep satisfaction freedom from fear and anxiety and insecurity, pure bliss, constant bliss. So Krishna consciousness means to first of all understand these points. We're not meant for suffering. We're not meant for any kind of suffering. We're meant to be blissful always. And it is possible to attain that state. That is our natural state. That natural state we can reawaken by the process of yoga. Bhakti yoga means devotional yoga. Again, not exercise. I'm talking about exercises. I'm sitting like this because I tend to get stiff knees, and it's a good little exercise, but now it's getting too stiff. So I'll just adjust. Oops, and not the body. But as long as we have these bodies, we should try to keep them healthy so that we can better do what we have to do in this life. You also got stiff knees, is it? Yeah, it's a bit of old age. It gets to us, doesn't it? I'm going that way too. But I'm not the body, and you're not the body. And it's great to know. It's great to know as the body's... In youth, the body seems so healthy and strong, and you think you can do everything. And then gradually you just see it all fading away around you and falling to pieces. And it just to keep the old machine moving along, you have to do so much maintenance. Like an old car, you know. It's planned obsolescence. It's like an old car. In the beginning it runs great. Then after 2 or 3 years, everything goes wrong. And however much you try to keep it going, it just keeps on going wronger and wronger and wronger. And then one day, just like I remember when I was a kid, my father started up the old car, and then there's a clunk, and then he got underneath and said the chassis had broken. I mean, that's the end of the car, right? The chassis had fallen down. It was in two pieces. So that's what happens to the body also. There comes a time where you're trying to keep it together, this, that, take this pill, do that exercise, go to the doctor, watch your diet, and when comes a time when, sorry folks, no more injections are going to help. So, what should we do? What should we do? First of all, understand, be a little sober, and step back from this very active life. We have such an active life, so busy running here, running there, doing this, doing that. Just step back, look and see, where am I going? What's it all about? Why am I suffering? First of all, realize that we're suffering. How can I get free? What should I really be doing with this life? Where am I going to? What happens after death? Who dares to ask that question? Most people don't even dare to. They don't even want to think about it. It's like the rabbit. The rabbit is... Have you ever seen that? A rabbit? You probably don't see that. You're not in Sheffield, but you wouldn't see that. Maybe out in the country, you see a rabbit is running. Well, you don't have wild dogs here so much. In India, I've seen it. The rabbit is running across the field, and the dogs are chasing it to kill it. And the rabbit knows. And dogs are running fast, the rabbit's running fast. And then there comes a point when the rabbit just knows there's nothing I can do, and just stops and just waits and very peacefully gets ripped to shreds by the dogs. I saw that once. And the dogs didn't want to eat the rabbit. It was just for them some kind of sport. Seemed like that. Yeah, gruesome, isn't it? Yeah? But that's life in the material world. The one animal is eating another animal. That's the way it goes on. One being is killing another living being. So we may just decide, oh, the rabbit, when he has no hope, just closes his eyes and like that. So we may close our eyes. The ostrich, famously, when caught by a predator, puts his head in the sand, so we're told. So like that, we may just decide to forget all of this, but better we better we see that we are in a very dangerous position and take knowledge from those who know about how we are suffering and how we can get free from suffering. That knowledge is there. It's not in the schools, not in the universities, not on the TV, not in the newspapers. But the knowledge is there. In Bhagavad Gita, that's Krishna has given this knowledge. That knowledge is timeless. People think that knowledge, it's getting more and more advanced. We're writing more and more advanced computer programs. But real knowledge, that doesn't change. Real knowledge of who we are, the nature of this world, it doesn't change. We don't change. Well, we do superficially, just like now I'm in one body. This body has changed. It was a child's body, and it was a youth's body, then it was middle-aged, I guess it's still middle-aged, getting towards the later part of middle-aged. The body will die, but I don't change. I am a living spiritual being. I'm going from body to body to body, but my original nature is eternal, full of bliss, no ignorance, no illusion. My true nature is happy, without death, in the service of Krishna eternally. So this knowledge is there. We can take advantage of this knowledge and of the process to get free from birth to death. Bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion. Very simple thing actually, by chanting the holy names of Krishna. This chanting is, it may seem just like some religious ritual, but it's very powerful. Very, very powerful for cleaning our consciousness. Our consciousness now. What is motivating us? What drives us on? Material desire. Let me do this. Let me do that. We have so many desires. And then desire transforms into frustration when it's not fulfilled. Frustration, anger, anxiety, that whatever we have, we may lose it. Fear that something terrible may happen, which it certainly will. So many bad things must happen to us. So because our consciousness is full of material desire, then it's full of material suffering. But when we know that anyway, I'm not this body, I'm a spiritual being by nature, I don't die. The body dies, I get another body. And then another, and another, until I realize that my nature is spiritual. I'm meant to serve Krishna. And when we serve Krishna, then our consciousness changes and we become fit for entering the spiritual world. Changing our material desire to spiritual desire. What is that spiritual desire? Simply to be happy with Krishna. That's all. In the service of Krishna. Very simple thing. Not difficult to understand. But we find it difficult to understand because these material desires are so strong. So strong. But we have to realize that it's all meaningless. It's meaningless. Whether I'm big and famous or small and insignificant, whether this football team wins or that football team wins, it's all insignificant. It'll all be forgotten in due course of time. It has no real meaning. What is our real meaning is that loving relationship with Krishna. When we say love, we don't mean some physical contact or any such thing. That means that completely giving ourselves to Krishna, because Krishna is so attractive. Krishna is so appealing. Krishna is so loving. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so beautiful, so merciful. In every way, Krishna is all attractive. So we can rise above fear, anxiety, illusion, depression, insecurity, and everything else simply by remembering Krishna, simply by chanting the names of Krishna and cultivating this consciousness, understanding who we are, eternal spiritual beings in relationship to Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. I'll stop there. And if there are any questions, I can take them. Yes, please. Some people are born with some sort of happiness. Yeah, some people. So this is a comment, not a question.
It's a comment, and the question is that what about your suggestion or your understanding? I can share with the people those who
you want to share happiness with others.
Oh, that's right, of course.
But what is that happiness that you want to share with them? To be involved in this world means to be involved in suffering, not happiness. The nature of this world is one of suffering. The attempt to make people happy in this world is actually violence against others. It's not a good thing. It's a bad thing. To attempt to make people happy in a world in which suffering is inevitable is actually a disservice to them. The idea, let me make others happy by helping them on the material platform without giving them the knowledge and the process by which they can get free from birth and death, actually implicates them in more suffering. So although the idea of making others happy is a nice idea, but unless we know how to make them happy, then we're actually harming them. Some people have the idea that we should make others happy by spreading certain kinds of religious processes which are extremely intolerant. But then other people see that as harm. Some people think that we can make others happy by giving them psychotropic drugs. Someone may think, oh, the alcoholic, make him happy by giving some alcohol. But the better form of giving happiness is to take him off the alcohol. So we're all intoxicated and addicted in this world to the idea that we can be happy in this world. But the very idea that we can be happy in this world works against us. We're hoping that we can be happy, but we have to suffer birth and death again and again and again. So we may say, oh, the world is very nice, it's a sunny day, let's all be happy and smile at each other. But what's the use of this illusory happiness when we have to get born and die again and again? So if we actually want to make others happy, we have to know, first of all, how to make others happy. Otherwise, this let's smile and be nice at each other, it's actually worse than useless. It's perpetuates the problem. It doesn't solve it. Yes, please. Did I meet Swami Prabhupada? What was it like? Many people ask me that. That's why I wrote a book about that. But I don't think we have any copies of that. Do we have My Memories of Srila Prabhupada? We have one copy left. Did I meet Prabhupada? Yeah. Yes. We should meet him all the time. We should be linked. Yoga means to link. So we should be linked always in service. This relationship with this Srila Prabhupada rendered the word guru as spiritual master. It's a spiritual relationship. So it's not ruptured by his leaving this physical plane. He's present and in his instructions. As he wrote in the dedication to his Srimad Bhagavatam, his magnum opus, his Srimad Bhagavatam commentary, he said, this is dedicated to my eternal spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. He lives forever in his divine instructions, and the follower lives with him. So we're still meeting. Yes, please. If people don't like the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, can we engage them in service? Yes, if they'd like to take to it. Could you give an example, please? We can give prasad to them, yeah? That will help them. But it's better if we tell them what it is also, so they can get an idea that it's not just some vegetarian food. It's a fact that most people are not interested in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness or Krishna consciousness in any shape or form. But we have to try and communicate it to them. And as much as we ourselves are Krishna conscious, that much we can communicate it to others. Speaking of philosophy is always important. It's definitely easier to give people prasad than it is to give them lessons. Most people don't even think that they're in need of any lessons, what to speak of taking any, but still we have to go on speaking the philosophy. That's also, that point is also made in another book of mine there, which is called On Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service, that we even though to try to convince people of the philosophy given by Krishna is a lot more difficult than giving them what they perceive to be nice vegetarian food, still we should continue with the endeavor to enlighten them by spiritual knowledge. Yada adityagato tejam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham adityavajjnanam prakashyati tat param. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, when one is enlightened by the knowledge which illuminates the whole being, it's like the sun, just like when the sun rises, everything becomes clear. Otherwise, of course, in the big cities, there are neon lights everywhere. But say you're out in the Pennines, Yorkshire moors, and there's no light and you're wandering around at night. But then when the sun comes up, then you can see where you are and where you're going. And you won't fall off the edge of a cliff. So by the sun, if you're lost on the Yorkshire moors at night, it's a very dangerous situation. But in the daytime, at least you can see. So, when the knowledge of Krishna, the realization, knowledge and realization arises in our heart, then everything becomes clear. So we should try to impart this sunlight knowledge of Krishna consciousness to others. Yes, please.
It seems, not only with this guy, but some people I've come across when trying to preach to them, it doesn't matter how hard you preach and explain it in such a simple way, or it seems that they're just incapable of grasping the concept.
Yeah, it seems some people are incapable of grasping the concept that we're not the body, even though it shouldn't be such a difficult thing to understand. We find that also many times Srila Prabhupada, he would explain, giving the example of the car and the driver. The soul is like the driver and the car is like the body. The car can't move without the driver. So in the same way, the body can't move without the soul. And you find sometimes people are very, very, Prabhupada, he would try, sometimes people are just so dull. They couldn't get it at all. I had an experience in London once. I was giving this an example of the car and the driver, and the person I was speaking to said to, well, you're supposed to be monks, why are you using cars? And what can you do when people are so dull-headed? Then you have to give them some prasadam. Yeah, education should start from the beginning. That's correct. Yeah, they should teach this. But you have to begin with yourself. You have to begin with yourself. You have to understand first before you can impart it to others. It is very difficult, no doubt. But although the endeavor there is to preach to everybody, at the same time we have programs like festivals, we distribute books, and in this way it's like putting out a large net. It's comparable to putting out a large net. And then some will find some people who are actually interested. Actually, people can usually understand better when they come out of their own curiosity and inquire. So if we make that various programs by which people see the devotees, they get the books, and then if they can come and inquire, then they're more likely to pick it up. Although it is a good thing to pick, to just like if you have a colleague and you're regularly speaking to him, then it may go through after some time, or it may be that when he's in some dire situation, then he remembers all this. So preaching Krishna consciousness, it's never fruitless. At least Krishna will be pleased. I've had many experiences where I've spoken to people and it seems that they just didn't take it, had no effect, but then later it had an effect. It's the seed is planted and in course of time it germinates. I've seen that many times. Preaching is Krishna consciousness is always auspicious. Same time, we have to be judicious, and we may not want to spend hours and hours and hours talking to someone if they're really not interested. Usually they won't listen anyway. Srila Prabhupada also gave the example that we try to he gave the example of the medical corps on a battlefield where so many soldiers are wounded. They'll usually try to help those who are less wounded, because they can be more easily revived. Anyway, there's so many people who are wounded, you can't treat them all, so better to treat those who are more likely to recover. So Srila Prabhupada gave that example to demonstrate that we'll concentrate our preaching efforts on those who are more likely to take it, rather than those who are less likely to take it. So, Hare Krishna, I think we should finish there because the hall is rented up till 9 o'clock and you have to take prasadam. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.